Hey, and welcome back to an exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today we have a short film called Bomb Promises. The director's here, whose last name I am going to screw up guaranteed, so we'll let him say it. Mark, welcome to the show, and introduce yourself, please.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's Mark Rosenzweig.
I know it sounds really easy, but people listen to my show know I screw up everybody's name, so I've just stopped trying now. It's just covering my stick.
It's not an easy one.
So you did a short film. Was that your whole goal at the beginning, to do a short, or did you have a longer film in mind? Because it seems like there could have been a longer film here.
Yeah, so actually Bomb Promises was originally a full-length dramatic play. Uh-huh. And we actually put it on as an independent student production at USC. We were all friends at USC together, and we did it as a play. And about a year after the play, we were all getting ready to graduate. I had formed Zephyr, my production company, with a few other USC film school buddies of mine. And I directed the play, Bomb Promises. And about 8 months before graduation, the writer said, hey, you know, I actually grew up, had this summer home in North Carolina where Bomb Promises is set. And I would love to film a short film adaptation on location. And so we basically went about adapting this, you know, hour and a half long play into a short film. And the reason why we did do it as a short and not a longer thing was, coming out of school, we had only really done short films. So that was what was in our ballpark. That's what we were experienced with, knew that we could pull off. So we immediately went into it with that in mind.
But I don't know. You've done short films. Wouldn't your next goal be a full length? Like, that seems to be what you're telling me here.
Yeah, totally. So now we're definitely on that track. We've produced a few web series as a company and multiple short films, including Bump Promises. And right now we are developing films, and we're totally in that mindset, trying to move into the longer form. But coming out of school, we had only shot stuff locally in Los Angeles. So as a team, we really felt like, yes, obviously features are the next step for us, and that's what we're focused on now. But at that time, we were seeing as shooting something on location as sort of a step up from what we had done. And it was a sort of don't bite off more than you can chew sort of situation. Looking back on it, you know, it would have been amazing to shoot a feature. And there was a lot of stuff that we cut that we did shoot on location. Obviously, you know, having a feature is a great thing. But at the time, like I said, you know, we were committed to creating a project that we knew that we could pull off. And at that stage, a lot of the short films we had done were between 5-10 minutes. So even, you know, doing a longer short, a 20-minute short, a 30-minute short, seemed very much like a step up and a new challenge for our team.
Okay. So when you're on a student film and you're at university, are you on a set? Like, you have a set at the school so you don't go outside?
So USC does offer sound stages for a lot of things, but obviously, you know, we would shoot a lot of things, yeah, either on location or on a set, but as a team, it had always been in Los Angeles. You know, producing wise, it's a whole nother thing. Flying out actors, putting them up, doing something that's on location in an area that we don't know all of the logistics for. You know, in Los Angeles, we're very comfortable filming here. We've done a lot of projects here. We have some go-to studios that we know, some go-to locations. We have crew here that we're very, you know, comfortable and familiar working with, but you know, going to North Carolina, it was a whole new experience for us. You know, okay, how exactly are we going to get these actors out there? How are we going to put them up? Where's our crew going to stay? All that sort of thing, and that was really something that we were excited about, taking on that challenge. And now, since doing Promises, we have done that, and we're, you know, much more comfortable doing that and excited about doing that. But for Bum Promises, it was the first time that the team had done that.
You may find this a strange question, but I'm going to ask it. Did you need any permits for your film at any time?
So we were really lucky in the sense that the writer, since we were using his basically his summer home to shoot the film, his community had known him growing up. So we basically just asked, you know, permission and favors, and we were able to film in you know, what was a beautiful location, Cashiers, North Carolina. And yeah, we were able to do it, you know, on low key, low budget without going through the getting the permits and all of that.
I was wondering that. Now, you start off, you mean it's a little, your film at the beginning doesn't really give the viewer a lot of direction. You kind of have to figure out what's going on. It does open up as it goes, but let's start at the very beginning just to help people out. We're at a campsite. Mm-hmm. You've never shot on location, you're telling me. How was doing that? Did you pick this campsite? Did you know where you were going? How did that all work?
Yeah, so the producing team and myself and the writer actually flew out to this location 2 weeks before we started filming. Part of the thing that I really wanted to do as a director, since we were shooting on location, is take advantage of the scenery and of the location. And so we spent a lot of time scouting exteriors. I knew that I wanted a lot of B-roll of the location, and I knew that we had scenes that took place outside, such as the opening campfire scene like you're talking about. So a lot of those 2 weeks of pre-production were scouting these locations and finding the best places and the safest places to do them.
How was the night shooting, though? I mean, it sounds like you didn't do that before, so that might have been different.
Yeah, so the whole production, you know, being a low budget production and being on set and on location, the team really had to put in, you know, extra hours and really hustle. We shot all of the film in 5 days. So for those night shoots, yeah, and we were all, you know, we were all staying together on location. The actors, of course, had a hotel nearby, but the crew was all bunked up together in this big house where we shot. You know, very indie filmmaking, out of college style. And so those night shoots, you know, they're great. The team was very excited about doing this project. You know, you didn't have anyone who didn't want to be there. Everyone who was there really wanted to be there. And that was crucial. Because what was harder than the night shoot itself was the next day, having to wake up after a full night shooting and get back to work and do a full another day of filming.
So when you keep mentioning your actors, and I think we have to mention the lead actor, he's got a very distinct look.
Ian Boyd.
Yes. Now, How long did you take to find him, or do you know him ahead of time? Or is he in the play that I missed?
So I did not know him at all ahead of time. And we got really lucky with casting because we were asking a great deal of these actors. They all worked deferred payments. You know, it was very much a passion project for everyone involved. And, you know, convincing someone in LA to fly out to North Carolina and work for free for 5 days isn't necessarily the easiest thing. So we got super lucky in the actors that we had. So I'll just go through really quickly. Maura Mannell, who plays the lead female role in the film, the sister, Delia. She, we already knew. We actually did a 120-hour horror film festival that was founded by James Franco and Scott Hayes, and they hand-select 12 different filmmakers or actors or producers team each year in their 120-hour horror film festival, and they selected her to lead a team. And she actually asked us and asked myself to direct that film. So we worked with her on that. So doing Von Promises, we had already known a person that we knew going into it. We had open auditions in Los Angeles, and we were super lucky. Ian came in, and he had already developed this entire character for Bones, and it was very close to what we had for the play. And when he left, the writer and I looked at each other and we were like, he's Bones. We basically knew it right off the first audition. And what was really amazing too, we had a very similar situation with Greg McKillop, who played Curtis, did not know him at all. And most of the actors I actually called in, I only called them in if they had a reel. Greg was one of the few actors that didn't have a reel that I called in for the audition. And it was just a look thing. I called him in because I said he looks like Curtis. He looked how I imagined Curtis to look. And he came in that original song that plays at the end. That's sort of like the Arlo Guthrie style song that's playing on the record. He came in with that song. That was his original song that he had written and composed, and he came in and he played that before the audition. And so when he left, we had a very similar reaction with him to he's Curtis. But we got very lucky in the casting process. And being in Los Angeles is great because there are so many actors. There's such a great pool of talent out here. So we're lucky to be here, but we also got even luckier in the casting process itself.
Now, let's move off to the house. We're going to move a bit further. I'm going to try to avoid the film. Listeners know that about me, so I don't want to spoil anything, but we're going to move. You have a bunch of flowers.
Yeah.
More than a few. I understand something happened, which is a big thing. Where did all those flowers come from? That could have been cheap.
Yeah, a local flower shop, actually. And they absolutely cut us a deal because we bought so many. But yeah, there were quite a few production design things that did have to happen because, like I said, this house that we were filming in, it was the writer's summer home. So it wasn't a home that, you know, was always lived in, and the location that we were trying to create was very much a family home that a family had lived in for, you know, 30 plus years. And so a lot of production design went into, you know, hanging the photos of the family on the wall, having the flowers in for, you know, the event that you're referring to, all of these things to make it feel like it actually was their home.
Now, you go back, let's go back to the beginning. Did either Bones or the dad play guitar?
So Bones did not play guitar at all. The only... But the other bum, as we would say, the other drifter, he was a guitarist. And for that role, once again, got super lucky with casting. Because we didn't want to obviously fly someone in for a one-day shoot, that was a one-night shoot for that role, we cast that role out of Atlanta and had an actor drive up for the shoot. And so what we did, that was part of the 2 weeks of pre-production, we had a casting call in Atlanta, and we just had people self-submit for that. It was all video auditions, and I knew that I wanted Midnight Special playing at the beginning. That is also how the play started, and I really liked that for setting the tone and the atmosphere and the world. The film. So I knew that I wanted someone who could at least, you know, strum out some chords and give us that song. And Dojo, our actor who played that role, he sent in his video audition and it was really great. He actually shot his video audition outside and created a whole campsite behind himself and everything. And he really set the scene for himself. And it definitely helped with his audition, just creating that whole scene rather than, you know, just doing it in front of a blanket like most people would. And he very much stood out to us, and he was, you know, nice enough to drive up for the night, crash for the night, and then drive back to Atlanta the next day for work. Once again, another person who was just very committed and very happy to work on the project, make it all happen.
And I forgot to ask one question more about the campsite. How cold was Bones? The other guy's wearing a coat. He's wearing like a wife beater shirt.
Yeah. See, we actually kept pretty. The thing is, we shot this in August. So it was pretty warm outside, even though it was night. The other guy honestly might have been more warm than Bones was cold.
Yeah. Well, you never know with these things, right? Because, I mean, I'm looking at it, I don't know what I'm actually seeing.
Right, right.
Okay, I always want to discuss food. You have a meal at the table. Who got to make it?
Sure. So we have the meal at the table. What do you want to know about the meal?
I want to know, was it that you're catering for the night, or did they get to actually eat something else?
The meal actually came from a delicious barbecue restaurant that was about 10 minutes away from the location we were staying at. And as you can imagine, the crew ate there a great deal. But that entire spread for that meal came from just a local barbecue joint. And that was also not only the prop food, but also the crafty for that night.
I figured as much. We got to ask. You have a scene with the train shot. How long did you wait for the train?
Yeah. So that was once again a part of those 2 weeks of filming, 2 weeks of pre-production, because I knew I wanted that train shot to establish that this guy is a drifter and has traveled a great deal on foot or on train. And we knew we wanted to do that, and so we were very careful about doing it. Of course, filming, you know, no permit, all that stuff. We were extremely careful. We made sure that we could get an area of the train where we could be far away from the track and still pull off the shot that we wanted. And we also had to figure out the timing of the train and what time it came by every morning. We locked down all those details. We found the right spot. We found the timing of it all. And so when we were actually filming, just myself, a producer, and the cameraman, and the actor, of course, went down to the train, and we got there about 30 minutes early, set up, waited, and when the train came by, we heard it coming, hit record, had one shot to do it, and, you know, we got it, and it was great, and we moved on.
Now, you have a scene that the house gets tossed. How many people had to work on that, and how many times did you have to reshoot it because you weren't happy?
Yeah, so the house getting tossed, we actually scheduled well, where the production designer and a couple of PAs were actually wrecking the house and tossing the house while the rest of the crew was taking dinner.
Ah.
So by the time dinner was over, basically the production designers and the PAs went and had their dinner, and the house was tossed and dressed up how it needed to be. And so we were ready to just set up and film it. A lot of scheduling kind of had to happen that way so we could pull off the whole shoot, because, you know, the thing with flying there and shooting it was, and we were all filming back so we filmed for 5 days and we were all flying back the sixth day. So if anything didn't happen in time, if anything had to get pushed back, we weren't going to have it. So a lot of scheduling was done like that. So, you know, even if some people were taking time off, even if someone was sleeping, whatever the case may be, you know, me and the DP may be getting an extra B-roll shot while the rest of the crew's taking some rest. People were constantly working, though.
How did you feel that viewers react to your flashbacks? Because, I mean, it does take a few minutes to figure out what's going on. Because I think the play would have explained that to us a little bit more with a little bit more running time. I felt you kind of cheated yourself at times by not explaining the flashbacks. It made sense to me in the end.
Sure.
But it took me a while to get there. And that's why I was asking. That's why I thought maybe this was a longer film in the beginning. Do you have that problem with a lot of people that takes them a few minutes to start figuring things out by the end?
Yes. I think a lot of people feel very similarly to how you did as well. What I will say is that's not so much a problem to me. And it actually, even in the play, even though you do get more of those flashbacks and you do sit in them longer, so I think you're right, the audience can kind of be like, oh, okay, this is what's happening. They have more time for that. People even watching the play took some time because the flashbacks come in so late.
Yes.
And that's very much purposeful in that you are unwinding with Bones, right? You're on this journey. You're getting this slice of Bones' descent, right? And it's very much already begun when the film begins.
Yes.
But you as the audience are catching up to that descent. And when it really starts to unravel and the mind really starts to unwind, that's when you get to see what he's seeing, right? And, you know, as far as it being confusing, like, you did get it eventually, right?
Yes.
You did understand, oh, right, we're seeing what he's thinking about, what he's seeing. And honestly, as an audience member, as a filmmaker, as a director, I love that. I don't necessarily want the audience to be 1,000% sure of what they're seeing all the time. You know, it's fun. For me as an audience member, it's fun to get to play detective. I like trying to figure out exactly what's happening and explore possibilities of, oh, you know, maybe this is a flashback, or maybe this is just something he's imagining, or what exactly is this, and trying to figure out the clues and being excited by the mystery.
Fair enough. Now, one thing I do want to touch on, which I know you wouldn't have a film if Delia did not let the guy in.
Right.
Now, let's back up. Is there any version she just said nope and slammed the door in his face? Because I did see that should have happened. If her brother was there, that scene does not – it doesn't go any further. And even she has problems. I think you have to let that scene play out. But I think as a viewer in real life, that scene doesn't happen the way you did. Do you see that?
Yes. That scene for us was huge. And in creating the short film adaptation, we spent a lot of time working on the dialogue on that porch scene. Okay. And it was, you know, something that we spent a lot of attention to for the very reason you're describing. Because it's like, man, I would never let a crazy person into my house, right? And this is the thing that we were really trying to stress and work with Delia's character. And, of course, you know, with a play, with being an hour and a half, you get a lot more time to establish character things. And, you know, in a 30-minute short film, you're trying to keep it moving and all of that stuff. But I do think the character trait is still there. Of a lot of it is Southern hospitality. You know, in this area, it's like you are friendly to your neighbors, you are friendly to people that were friendly with your family, all of those things. It is customary to invite someone in for a glass of tea or whatever the case may be. And so we're dealing with that element and really trying to make that a basis for letting him in the house. And then also taking advantage of obviously someone who is grieving and taking advantage of that pain. And that pain that is so personal.
Did you find that audience reacted well when we find out what happens to Bones in the end? Like, we don't have a clear-cut ending. I want people to know that. There is no ending.
Right.
So you kind of have to presume what you want.
Right.
So did audience okay with that? I mean, some audience I can see be upset because I kind of want a little bit more of – I have an idea what happens. I guess other audience members. Do you hear – what are the endings they suggest to you?
I think that it's mixed. I think some people feel that they want to see more and they want to know how it ends. And then I think that some audience members like that they get to imagine how this story plays out and where it ends. And when we were creating the short film, we talked a lot about the ending and all of that. But the way we were really thinking of this, and the play was like this too, is this is, you know, it's a slice of life moment, right? You're getting this one 48-hour period or, you know, whatever it is with this guy. And it's very contained to that. And so it was important in both the play and the short film in not trying to tell the story of this guy's entire life and wherever that may go, wherever that may end. And instead very much focusing on this part of the unwinding, of the unraveling. And it does end in a place where it could go a number of ways, how it ends. And just, you know, as much as it's up to Bones how it ends and all of that, you know, it's also left for the audience to wonder what this all is going to amount to.
Now, did you fly back to South Carolina and do a filming to show them what you did there, or they've never seen it?
So it did in North Carolina. Yes, it did screen at three different festivals in North Carolina, and so it was screened there and well received, and people, you know, loved that it was shot there and that it was made by someone who, you know, grew up there over the summers and all of that. We never were able to attend any of the festivals. But it did screen, it did premiere in North Carolina, and festival directors let us know that it was, you know, very well received.
Weren't you upset you didn't go back for that barbecue?
Yeah, hopefully sometime soon. There was a lot of good food. There was a lot of good food.
So with your next film, did you keep your selection of actors, or are you one of these people that need to start with new people?
Yeah, so we've actually used Maura, the lead actress in the film. We've used her a few times in our projects. Haven't had a chance yet to work with Ian or Greg again, but I'm sure we will. Our production company very often works with not only the same actors, but the same crew. We try to keep, you know, a network, a team. And, you know, when we enjoy working with someone and we love working with them, we always try to, you know, work with them again in the future.
Are you ready for some fun questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, your favorite film, because your first time on, everybody gets this one to start.
Oh, man, favorite film. Wow, any genre?
I mean, go nuts.
The Shining.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Since you're a student, what is the weirdest meal you've ever made?
Oh, man. Okay, this is really embarrassing. I'll give it to you though. So one time my oven in my kitchen was not working, okay? And I had a frozen pizza and it was the only thing I had for food. And so I tried to make the frozen pizza in my toaster.
How is that possible?
It wasn't. It did not cook. It did not work. I did not eat the pizza. It was completely ruined. But that is like the weirdest, most student-y food situation I've ever had. You know, I didn't even have ramen. I just had a frozen pizza and no oven to bake it in.
One film you've never seen and should have.
One film I've never seen and should have? Oh, man. Wow. That's really good. The sequel of Blade Runner, the new Blade Runner movie, I still haven't seen it, and everyone tells me visually it's incredible.
It is.
And I love Blade Runner, but I have not seen this new Blade Runner movie.
It is visually stimulating. Breathtaking.
Yeah, I need to see it. I probably missed out not seeing it in theaters, but...
You're a student. You'll find a way to get in somehow. I know you'll find a screening somewhere. Magically show up somewhere at some point in your life. Tell everybody where they can find your film.
Okay, so you can find our film on YouTube. If you just go to YouTube and you search Zephyr Entertainment, that's Z-E-P-H-Y-R, like Zephyr song. Zephyr Entertainment, we're on YouTube. We not only have Bum Promises on there, but we have other short films on there as well, including the horror short I was talking about made for James Franco and Scott Hayes' 120-hour film festival. That's called The Sanctuary. We also have a couple of our web series on there, and we're continuing to roll out more content on that YouTube channel.
Thank you for your time. Have a good day.
Hey, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.